Blog Talk Radio.
Talk about my thug. Leave my dog out of it. Harumph. Good evening. And welcome to Eerie House Radio. What could be stranger than that? It's Friday the 13th. I can't even believe that day almost got away from us. Friday the 13th, and we got a little stranger danger for you tonight. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. I'm accompanied by...
Dave Binkley from Where Did You See That Movie and Spaceship One. And we're here along with...
It is I, Gazabool, blabble it to all. Pardon my hooting.
Yeah, were you barking or hooting?
Hoot, hoot. That was a hoot.
Hoot. Gar the Ghoul coming out with his own internet service provider thingy coming soon.
Fresh from Hooterville, it's Gar's Intercontinental Ghostly Cable Service. It'll be amazing.
Cable service?
It sounds like it would be. I'll take that with ketchup, please.
It comes with its own hand crank. I'm not going to explain.
Please don't.
Anyway.
We got three. Count them. Three.
People in the chat.
Is that two? That's two.
And we have at least two people operating this channel today.
Yeah. At no point does Gar get his hands on the controls. We get it. Okay.
Would I do something like that? No. Anyway, we got three tales of strangers. A little stranger danger.
Yeah.
Not the first time we tackled this topic.
Oh.
No, but have a new, brand new program, a brand new old program to bring to the table tonight, Dale.
Hey, that's right.
It's Rocky Jordan.
Oh, that? Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a new show to the, that's a new show to our show.
I was unfamiliar with the Rogues Gallery.
We have had Rogues here before. We have had
it was Dick Powell's series before he became Richard Diamond, private detective.
they took out the comedy, I guess. Is that what? Because that was weird.
Yeah, he's got his alter ego in that. He usually gets knocked out in an episode, and he floats up to Cloud 7, and his alter ego tells him to go back and gives him the clue to go back and solve the crime.
Right. Ooh. Because Rocky Jordan has never been on our program, on your program, on our program, on whatever this is.
Or on our program, yeah.
We should give some background. Can we say hour? It's an hour. It's
hour.
Over an hour long. It's over
go.
An hour long.
On our
we should
hour
give some
show,
background.
Yeah.
Give some background on the plot device for Rocky Jordan, maybe, yes?
Well, yeah. It's a lot like A Man Named Jordan. How's that?
But it's not.
Anyway, of course, the famous Humphrey Bogart, Casablanca, where he was an American restaurateur in Casablanca. Well, in June, that's not right. Where is it at? Let's see.
October 31st, 1948.
Well, yeah,
we're not there yet.
1948 to 50 was that. And again, June 51, there was summer replacement to August of 22nd of 51. But it was similar to a show before that, what was called A Man Named Jordan, where he was an American restaurateur in Cairo. But here, Rocky Jordan is an American restaurateur in...
Parma?
In Istanbul.
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 Yeah. Istanbul. Oh, no, that's right. Jordan was Istanbul. Yes. He's in Rocky Jordan's Cairo. I get those two mixed up. They're spelled so much the same.
It's important to understand the difference between Istanbul and Cairo, kind of the difference between 14 and 568, maybe. What is all that noise?
Both of those on CBS Radio.
Right. And Rocky Jordan was a disenfranchised private detective or a police detective who turned into a restaurateur, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I got out of it.
I didn't see that part, but yeah, probably. But yeah, so it's more of a straight thing like Casablanca was in a way. You know, Richard Rogue was a whole different creature where it's half comedy, half serious. Maybe three quarters comedy and a quarter serious. But anyway,
but wasn't he replaced on the show by George Raft? Wasn't he replaced by George Raft?
Jack Moyles was the veteran 80. Yeah, but he was replaced by George Raft. Yeah,
George Raft
for the brief. Yeah. That was just for the summer replacement run.
That summer stock run, right? Whatever that was.
Yeah, the summer stock. But that was George Raft in the 51 version.
Yeah,
but he was set adrift.
It was weird to follow it outside of the parameters of not understanding. not between 14 and 30, but but between understanding it's in Cairo and why, and because when my first exposure to it was like what, and then I went back and did a little detective work that we've done and found out more.
There's more.
That makes
the story
a little bit more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and think of it kind of like a radio version of Casablanca. If Casablanca had never been made, but of course, if Casablanca had never been made, neither would this show have. So, I don't know if you can planning on that.
I'll give
that
to you. Yeah, except that in the story Casablanca, Rick, wasn't it Rick? Yeah, Rick
yeah,
wasn't
yes.
A detective. Was he a detective?
No, I don't think.
No.
I don't believe so.
We don't know what he was. But he had a hot girlfriend. I don't know.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, Woo-hoo! He had that. And he had Sidney Greenstreet and Peter Lorre. And
the two opposites of the hot girlfriend.
Hello. On a scale of 14
James,
to 30, that's a hot James, girlfriend. Okay.
Was that James Mason that was in there also? Was he the detective or the inspector over there or something?
Oh, my gosh.
No, Claude Rains. That was Claude Rains. Claude Rains.
Yes, Claude Rains. And he was the most visible, invisible inspector I ever saw. Get it? I get it. Okay.
Welcome, Fogsbane. Two of three of us have been delivered.
yes, Fogsbane.
Two out of the three.
This is amazing.
Have been delivered.
Amazing.
I can't wait.
It is absolutely amazing.
Yes. A lot of radio.
I understand there's a package waiting for me at UPS, but they're concerned because it's ticking. Is that normal? What's going on there? Anyway.
You'll find out when you come back on tomorrow when people watch you on Horrible Horror starring Gare the Ghoul and there's all these
things
all over your face.
I
don't know what happened.
My oars are still out of the water on Horrible Horror for the seventh continual week. I do have something nobody has seen since 2015, but I won't be.
You won't see the
tube. Yeah, it'll be a review. I'll be in chat live, but it won't be live. It'll sort of be live, but it's not. Yeah. Anyway, nobody's seen it since 2015, so. It's brand new to a lot of people, I guess. Blah, blah. Don't know.
Blah, blah.
Whole lot of radio.
it's not official until...
CW.
That threw everybody off.
I'm not sure what that was. But okay.
A whole lot of radio.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Yeah.
That's what it was supposed to be.
We also had the sealed book that I did a whole bunch of investigative reporting on this week.
Good. You did.
Why not share a little? We can start off with the
sealed
book.
You had a lot
book.
Of time on your hands since you couldn't work your show up because your internet is up to par. It's not up to par.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we found out that existing there are 26 episodes. I don't know if there are more or that was it. And it came on Sundays from 10:30 to 11, which is a great time for a good spooky type of radio presentation.
Yes, exactly.
And we didn't know the number, so someone gave me a start date of March 18th, and I extrapolated it forward every Sunday, and I got an actual possible original air date, maybe.
We'll run with it. We will trust your legwork. We will trust your research.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're the one with the calculator, so, you know.
Tonight's episode, we might as well start off with the sealed book. It's called Stranger in the House. Broadcast date estimated to be
Sunday between 10:30 and 11 p.m., May 6, 1945.
Why not?
Woot, woot. Woot.
The Sealed Book. Once again, the keeper of the book has opened the ponderous door to the secret vault, wherein is kept the great sealed book, in which is recorded all the secrets and mysteries of mankind through the ages. Here are tales of every kind, tales of murder, of madness, of dark deeds strange and terrible beyond all belief. Keeper of the book, I would know what tale we tell this time. Open the great book and let us read. Slowly, the great book opens. One by one, the keeper of the book turns the pages and stops. Ah, the strange story of a cursed and evil spirit. A spirit that threatened the peace and happiness of a young married couple. A tale called Stranger in the House. Is the tale, Stranger in the House, as it is written on the pages of the sealed book. The tale was told by Jane Barton herself.
From the first moment I saw Wickford Manor, I was filled with a sense of uneasiness, almost fear, a fear I couldn't explain. To all outward appearances, Wickford Manor was just another old, staunchly built colonial house, the kind you see through all New England. Roger, my husband, was delighted with the house. Its beauty and remoteness won his heart in the beginning.
Say, take a look at that beautiful staircase. Look at this magnificent fireplace in the drawing room.
Yes, it is beautiful, Roger.
It's just the size house we need with four rooms upstairs.
Four rooms upstairs? How do you know, Roger? The agent never mentioned how many rooms the house had.
Didn't he? Well, there's only one way to find out. Let's go upstairs and look. Come on, Janie.
All right, Roger.
Yeah, this house would require very little in the way of repairs.
But it hasn't any electricity, Roger.
Oh, well, we could use lamps until a line could be run to the house. Look, Janie, there are four rooms up here.
So there are. It's as though you've been in this house before.
Yes, I have a feeling I have. Now, perhaps that's the reason I like it. But, darling, you've been ever so quiet since we entered the house. Don't you care for it?
I don't know. It seems unfriendly.
Well, if you don't like it, then we'll keep on looking until we find a house we both like.
Oh, nonsense. I've been married to you too long not to know you've got your heart set on this place. We'll never find anything nicer. Now, that room with the southern exposure will be our bedroom.
Oh, Janie, you're wonderful. And we will be happy here. I know we will.
Because I loved Roger and wanted to see him happy, I buried my fears and agreed to the purchase of the house. The first evening in our new home, as I went about the drawing room unpacking our belongings, I suddenly realized how cold and clammy the room was in spite of the roaring fire. Beyond the feeble light of the oil lamp, the room was thick with fog. Suddenly it seemed to engulf me like a shroud, and I felt the icy coldness of the grave upon me. My heart pounded in my ears. I fell faint. After what seemed like eternity, the fog rolled away. The light of the lamp became brighter. I felt unbearably alone. I rushed out of the drawing room. As I opened the door to the study, I saw Roger seated before the fireplace. He was staring unseeingly at the ashes of a fire long since gone out. Roger. Roger. Roger!
What? Oh, it's you, Jane.
Roger, is anything wrong?
Wrong?
Yes, you seem so far away, remote. It frightened me. Do you smell perfume in here?
Perfume? Why, yes. It's the perfume I gave you for your birthday, isn't it?
No. No, it isn't my perfume. It smells like narcissus.
Yes, so it does.
How strange. Roger, what were you thinking of when I came in here?
I don't know. My mind was reaching out for something. Something in the past. But it was also confused. It was as if I were wandering in a fog.
Wandering in a fog?
Yes. Jane, you're so pale. Aren't you feeling well?
I'm just tired. It's been rather a tiring day.
Now you go up to bed, Jane. I'll be along later.
All right, dear. Don't forget to turn out the lamp when you come up.
I won't.
I left the study and Roger. After tossing in my bed for hours, I fell into a fitful sleep. Suddenly awakened to hear the clock in the hall striking the hour. It was 5 o'clock, and Roger's bed was empty. Quickly slipping on my robe, I left my room and started down the stairs. As I reached the foot of the stairs, I stopped, for to my astonishment, I heard Roger's voice in the study. I slowly approached until I was at the door.
Who are you? This mist, if I could only make you out clear. So difficult. Mist obscures your face. Who are you? Why don't you say something?
Roger! Roger! Unlock the door! It's Jane!
What's wrong? The mist, it's coming between us. I can hardly see you. Oh, don't go. Come back, please. Please come back.
Darling! Darling, please unlock this door. Please! Roger!
Thank you.
Back to the story as it is written in the sealed book. It was 5 o'clock in the morning when Jane suddenly woke and found Roger locked in his study. He was apparently talking to someone, although there could be no one there. Hysterically, Jane pounded on the study door.
Darling, darling, unlock the door, please. Roger! Oh, Roger.
What is it, Jane?
I was so frightened. Who are you talking to?
Talking to? I don't know. I must have been dreaming.
Oh, yes. Yes, you must have been. There isn't anyone in here. Roger, the scent of narcissus. So strong in here.
Yes.
Much stronger than it was at midnight. Roger, what were you dreaming about?
It was night. All around me was a mist. And there was a woman.
A woman?
Yes. I could barely make out her face in the swirling mists, but it was a beautiful face, the most beautiful face I've ever seen.
Did you feel you'd seen her before?
Yes, but I couldn't remember where.
Oh, what do you make of it, Roger?
Make of it? Oh, it was just a dream, I suppose. What else could it have been?
Roger said it was a dream. But in his heart, I knew he believed it was more than a dream. During the days that followed, he'd pace incessantly in the study, paying no attention to me, living only for the coming of twilight. And when night did fall, he'd lock himself in the study, forbidding me to disturb him. Hours would pass, and then suddenly I'd hear him talking to her, begging her to come closer, pleading with her to speak to him. At last, one night, I couldn't stand it any longer. When he began talking to her, I knocked on the door of the study until he opened it.
What do you want? I thought I told you I wasn't to be disturbed.
I must talk
you
to you.
You must be fool. She was about to speak to me for the first time. And you knocked on the door and caused her to vanish.
Oh, Roger, Roger, you're not in love with her. You couldn't be.
But I am. There's never a moment I don't think of her. Wish that I might see her.
Oh, what you're saying is madness. You can't be in love with her. She's from another world, a phantom, an evil ghost.
No, she isn't evil. She's beautiful. So beautiful, I'd give my life for her.
Roger, listen to me. You must come away from this house and from her. She's cast a spell over you, and it can only lead to disaster. Roger, we must leave this house at once.
No, never.
I insist.
Get out, you hear? And don't come back. I'll never leave her, never.
Dr. Smith, in view of what I've told you, do you think you can help me?
Now, you say, Mrs. Barton, that when you drove out to Wickford Manor for the first time, your husband seemed to recognize the house?
Certain things about it, yes.
There's a history to Wickford Manor, though few people are familiar with it.
A history to Wickford Manor?
Yes. The house was built in 1811 by Martin Wickford for his bride, Harriet. A year later, Harriet's sister, Isabel, came to live with the Wickfords. She was a remarkably beautiful woman. So beautiful that Martin Wickford fell in love with her and she with him.
Then what happened?
Well, one day while Martin was hunting in the mountains, he was killed in a fall. When his companions brought his body back to Wickford Manor, they found Harriet, his wife, dead. She'd been poisoned.
Poisoned?
Yes. At the sight of Martin's body, Isabel went to pieces and confessed that she had poisoned her sister. Before she could be arrested, she committed suicide. In the study.
In the study?
Yes. In the years that followed the tragedy, Wickford Manor had a succession of tenants, all of whom left after a brief residence.
You mean they saw her too?
Well, the tenants made no claim of seeing anyone, but their fear of an unknown element in the house led them to leave.
But the other tenants never saw her. Why should Roger see her?
Mrs. Barton, you said that your husband seemed to know many things beforehand about the house.
Yes, I recall joking with him about it. I said it was as though he'd been there before.
Perhaps he had, long ago, as another person.
As another person?
Yes.
You mean Roger had once known Wickford Manor in some previous life?
How else do you account for his remembrance of things that he'd never seen in this life?
Oh, you're trying to tell me something, Doctor. What is it?
Perhaps your husband and the spirit of the woman Isabel are able to bridge the gap of time and space because they had once known each other in another life.
Doctor, you don't believe that Roger was Martin Wickford?
I don't know. What is happening at Wickford Manor is beyond the knowledge of the living. But this I do know. We must return to the manor at once, for the spirit that's abroad in the house is one to be feared more than death itself.
Sounds like grounds for divorce, but maybe that's me.
I thought making bad coffee was grounds for divorce.
I would have divorced myself years ago. But no.
Is that legal?
It is now. Some lady just married her cat.
Should marry your dog. They're much more faithful than cats.
There was a news report that a woman had a pet cat and didn't want to get evicted from her apartment, so she married the cat. True story. So I don't know. You could probably divorce yourself, maybe.
But if you divorce the cat, who gets the catnip? That's what I want to know.
A dog named Ralph in Oklahoma.
No. Hey, Dale.
Hey, Bill.
Dale.
Hey, Bill.
Dale.
Boogie, boogie, snoogie, doogie. The spirits are about to speak.
I guess it's just you and me here, Gar.
I guess so.
He's on, but he's not.
I hope
he's not got this connection thing, this disconnection thing going again. But because we all know, there's never anything that goes wrong with your cable.
This week on Eerie House Radio, the part of Dale is played by a hand puppet.
Oh, shoot. Hang on. I got it.
And you know how talkative those are.
Yeah. Let me see. I think this is it here.
A whole lot of radio.
Yeah, see? Right there.
There we go.
A whole lot of radio.
Buzz.
He's here, but he's not. Yeah, there's a buzz. See, I'm there. That's right.
A whole lot of radio.
Skibby doobie. Skibby doobie. The spirits are about to speak.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I see. I'm there. Not like I can get a word in. Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
Right.
Okay. We'll give you 3 seconds of silence, Gar. In 3 seconds, we'll give them 3 seconds to say something. One, two, three.
Oh. He is here.
He is not here. He is not here.
Oh, wait. That's his ghost.
No, that's my goat. My goat's right here.
I thought it was his goat.
No, it's my goat. Are you trying to get my goat?
Custody of this goat?
Are you trying to get my goat, Gar?
Wow. Broken goat. All on radio, says Dale.
All on radio.
All on radio.
We're not trying to have fun with us.
See, we're including you, Dale.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Somebody's calling in. Who could that be?
Ahem. whole lot of radio.
There was a substitute teacher just walked into the room.
Uh-oh. All right, Gar. Back to your corner, and I'll go back to mine.
Okay. Back to playing with hand puppets. All right.
I'm afraid of you with hand puppets.
I've got hand puppets here. I do.
Sock puppets, hand puppets. It's all the same.
I've got Cookie Monster and The Count and...
And part two of Stranger in the House.
A whole lot of reading.
The reason I'm back. From the field book.
Stolen.
Please come closer so I can see you better. Oh, you're beautiful. Beautiful. Can't you... Won't you tell me who you are? We have met before, haven't we?
Yes. We've met before.
What? You spoke.
I've waited so long for you, Martin.
Why do you call me Martin? My name's Roger.
It was Martin. Then.
Then? What do you mean?
Look at me, Martin. Look into my eyes. Don't you remember me?
Yes, but where?
Think, Martin. Think. Time is the barrier between us, but we shall surmount it. Think back into the dim past when you lived in this house and we loved each other.
Isabel. Oh.
Yes, Martin. Isabel. Do you remember now?
Yes, Isabel, yes. I remember everything up to the day I went hunting in the mountains and fell. What happened to me, Isabel? What happened to us? To our love?
Don't think of that accursed day, darling. But think of the future. Our happiness together.
Oh, yes, Isabel. Our happiness together.
Roger, please open the door. Roger!
Martin, she's come back.
Yes. Darling, don't go. Don't leave me.
I must, Martin. I must. We could be so happy together.
Come back. Please come back.
Roger, please unlock the door. Please.
What do you want? What did you come for?
Roger, this is Dr. Smith. Doctor, this is my husband.
What the devil did you bring him here for?
Roger, please. I thought perhaps he could help us.
Help us? I don't need anybody's help. I must warn you, Mr. Barton. The spirit of the woman you see in the study is an evil one. One that will lead you to disaster. I don't need help from you or anybody else. Now get out of this house. Get out, both of you.
Doctor, we must do something. We must.
We shall. But not tonight. I must have time to think about it. You'd better return to the village with me.
No, I don't want to leave him in the house alone. Something might happen to him.
Very well, then. I'll return late tomorrow afternoon, and when I do, we shall take action. Isabel, where are you? I'm alone now, darling. Please come back.
I'm here, Martin. I'm here.
Oh, yes, I see you now. Promise you'll never leave me again, Isabel.
I don't want to leave you, darling. But that woman is trying to come between us.
Jane?
Yes. She hates me, Martin. She will come between us if you don't get rid of her.
I tried to make her leave, but she wouldn't go.
Then that leaves only one thing to do.
One thing to do?
Yes. Come. We must hurry. It's almost dawn, and I'll have to leave you soon. Look at her, lying there asleep, so defenseless. Yes, go ahead. Put your hands around her throat. And squeeze.
Oh.
Hurry, Martin, before she awakens.
Who's there?
Answer her.
It's Roger.
Oh, for a moment I was so frightened. What time is it?
It's just dawn.
Hurry, Martin. I must leave.
Yes.
Roger. Roger, why are you looking at me like that? Oh, no, Roger. No, Roger.
Tied her, Martin. Tied her until she stops struggling and is still forever.
Isabel, don't leave me. Isabel, where are you? Isabel, please don't leave me, Isabel.
Roger, she made you do it, didn't she? Oh, Roger, Roger.
And now to continue the story as it is written in the sealed book. As Jane finished describing to the doctor how Roger, urged on by the sinister spirit he called Isabel, had nearly strangled her, the doctor spoke.
And then, Mrs. Barton, you say your husband stopped choking you and ran out of your room and down to the study?
Yes, Dr. Smith.
Oh, I should have known better than to let you remain in this house last night. Don't you see? If Isabel knows that if he murders you, he will then join her cursed spirit forever in this house.
Oh, look. Look, it's growing dark out. Soon she'll appear to bewitch him again. Doctor, we must do something.
Very well. This woman, Isabel, has been denied the peace of the grave because her sister's blood is on her hands. She belongs neither to the living or the dead, only to this house. If we could get your husband to leave, perhaps it would break the spell she's cast over him.
Yes, but he absolutely refuses to leave.
Then we must force him to. I could very quickly give him a hypodermic and render him unconscious.
Yes. Then we could carry him away.
And to make sure he never returns to this house, we must burn it to the ground before we leave.
Yes, we will burn it. And the evil that's in it.
Then if you'll lead me to the study.
All right, Doctor. Have you the hypodermic ready?
Yes. Now, when your husband opens the door, just gain his attention for a moment. Long enough for me to give him the injection.
Very well. Roger. Roger, open the door. I want to talk to you.
What do you want? Why has he come back to this house?
He's come to take me away, Roger.
To take you away? Good. I'm glad to see you. What have you stuck me with? What's that in your hand?
Just the hypodermic, Mr. Barton.
A hypodermic? What are you up to? You're trying to take me away from this house. From her. Well, I won't go. I won't go. Do you hear?
Oh, Dr. Quick, he's falling.
I've got him, Mrs. Barton. Now I suggest you take that lamp and smash it on the floor.
Yes. Let's burn the place down to the ground.
Yeah, that's it. Now you'd better help me carry your husband out of the house. In a little while, this house will be a raging inferno. He's regaining consciousness, Mrs. Barton.
Will he remember what's happened?
I don't know.
How are you, darling?
Oh, hello, Janie. Oh, but I had a terrible dream. It's all so confused.
You've been very ill, but now you're going to be all right.
Of course.
Oh. Where am I?
You're in my home, Mr. Barton.
Yes, darling. Our house burned down last night.
Burned down? Oh, that's too bad. Well, we only had one night in our new home.
One night? Yes, of course, Roger.
Well, Mrs. Barton, in spite of the loss of your home, I think you were very fortunate, for there are things far worse than fire.
Yes, Doctor. And I can never thank you enough for breaking the bridge between the past and the present.
What are you two talking about?
Oh, nothing, darling. Nothing at all.
Roger, you've been humming that all day.
Well, I like it.
But you can't carry a tune.
Oh, nonsense. I've carried this tune for 300 miles, and I'll carry it the rest of the way to California.
Oh, what a trip this is going to be.
Roger.
What?
Do you smell something?
Yes. Good night air.
No, I don't mean that.
Well, what's wrong with you, Janie?
Don't you smell it?
What? You mean that perfume?
Yes.
Seems familiar. What is it?
Narcissus.
Narcissus?
Yes. Oh, Roger, we haven't escaped from her. She's here in this car.
Mark, it's Isabel. Think, darling. Think.
Roger. You look as though you're listening to her.
Do remember everything now. Don't you, Martin?
Yes.
Darling, we must get rid of her. She's trying to come between us.
Yes.
Oh, Roger, you mustn't listen to her.
Once she's gone, we'll be together forever, darling.
Yes. Forever.
Roger. Roger, why have you stopped the car? No. No, don't look at me like that. Roger, no. Stay away from me. You must not.
A few hours after Jane was found strangled in the abandoned car, state police arrested Roger Barton and charged him with murder. Strangely enough, as Roger was being hanged for his crime, witnesses at the execution noticed a strange scent of perfume about the gallows. Some people said afterwards that it was Narcissus, and they remarked on the expression of joy on Roger's face as he died. And now, keeper of the book, before you close the great volume, show us the tale we tell next time. This one. Ah, yes, a weird and incredible tale of a wife who was being blackmailed because of her past.
But because she did not know the identity of her blackmailer, she suffered 1,000 times over. The tale is called Out of the Past. Be sure to be with us again next time when the sound of the great gong heralds another strange and exciting tale from The Sealed Book.
The Sealed Book!
The Sealed Book, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is produced and directed by Jock McGregor.
The Sealed Goat. A classic. Here on Erie House Radio.
Are we going to have some milk? The sealed test.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Goat milk? No.
Who knows? Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Once a strangler, always a strangler.
That has to be about the worst. Yeah, you know, that has to be about the, okay, I wash my hands now. That has to be the worst prescription a doctor ever gave somebody. Burn down the house. Yeah, that's
yes,
great. Okay, make it a homeless ghost, and then they move in with you. That's so much better.
There you go.
Right. Why wasn't the doctor arrested for arson? Why wasn't the doctor brought up on charges for illegally tranquilizing someone? A lot of stuff going on with that doctor.
Yeah, maybe he's
Dr.
an escapee or something.
Dr. Smith.
Yeah. the doctor is sitting there talking to him. Oh, well, after he strangled you. Wait, what? Strangled you? What? No, what? yeah.
Burn the house down. Do you have any kids named William around here? Oh, no.
Were any of the Friday the 13th people involved in a house fire?
I'm sure one or another. I'm not an expert on those. Like you, Gar, I'm not a big slasher fan.
No,
I'm not either.
But when I was a mere 20-something years old, Friday the 13th, the TV series pops up, and I'm like, oh, this is great. I believe it was in syndication. It came on after 11 or something.
Yeah, whenever station wanted to show it. But, yeah, that was very well done, where they accidentally sold a bunch of cursed items when their uncle's pawn shop, who owned a pawn shop, died. And then they found out they were cursed items, and spent the series trying to buy those items back or get those items back. That actually was pretty cool.
That makes it for an almost anthology series approach.
Yes.
Yeah.
And even though the special effects weren't cutting edge or anything by today's standards, not bad. You know, suspension of belief, and, you know, you could, yeah.
Suspicion of belief.
Yeah, well, the suspicion of belief is our political system. So we'll leave that alone.
Wait, I thought that was our club name. No, that was
it. We'll leave that one alone.
Yes, it was all about belief.
Yeah, it was.
I brought that to you guys. I love that you guys that I have expanded your universe to understand. It was all about belief.
I expand enough of my own universe without your help. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I thought you meant my waistline. So
beware.
No,
of
I
strangers.
Had a Reuben.
Beware of strangers.
Beware of strangers.
Beware.
Trying to stay on topic a little here. We got
a lot of radio.
More tales. Yeah. Like the man said.
A lot of radio.
That ominous voice from above has spoken.
Hello, radio.
Almost godlike. Like God. Like,
I understand there's a whole lot of radio.
Okay,
a whole lot of radio.
Idiots. That's who that guy is. All right.
I'd like to order a hamburger and a whole lot of radio.
So, what shall we play next? We got full shows.
I have
we
the
keep
faintest idea. Why not our new one? Our new to the channel program.
Yeah, we go to Rocky Jordan, as we explained earlier, kind of a radio version of Casablanca.
That Rocky, really you want people to rub it out of my head?
No, I don't know if you want to do that there in Cairo, but whatever.
The one thing about his internet being out, gang, he has a lot of time to brew coffee. Oh, yes, he does.
A Rubik's Cube of Erie House. A large arsenic.
Let's
Sounds
move
good.
Along, shall we, with a tale called Strangers 3 from Rocky Jordan.
From December 5th, 1948.
So they say.
Time now for Rocky Jordan. I'm always suspicious of a man, even in Cairo, who wants to play hide-and-seek. Especially when he's a total stranger. Well, this fellow in a felt hat and tweeds had been shadowing me for too long. So finally, around 10 o'clock, I left the Cafe Tambourine, figuring that before the night was over, my shadow and I would be properly introduced. But before it was over, I met a lot of people. Living and dead. Again, we bring you a story of adventure with Rocky Jordan, proprietor of the Cafe Tambourine, which stands in a narrow street off Cairo's native quarter within sight of the Mosque Sultan Hassan. The Cafe Tambourine, crowded with forgotten men from the world's waterfronts, alive with the babble of many languages. Now, Rocky Jordan, and tonight's story, Strangers 3. I made a dry run down the Boulevard Barkil, and sure enough, a stranger in felt hat and tweeds was still following me. I headed south, away from the crowds. He was right behind me like the back hump on a camel. I picked a nice dark alley for our meeting and faded into a doorway. I didn't have to wait long. As he came by, I grabbed for him.
Mr. Jordan, stop it.
Who are you? What do you want?
Take your hands off me, Mr. Jordan.
You've been tailing me all day. Why?
Only for an opportunity to talk with you. This is a very personal matter.
From the top of the page, mister. Start with your name.
Feder Brahms.
I'm delighted. Just what do you want?
After I explain, you will understand why I did not wish to show myself. You see, I knew you were a good friend of Angus Morgan.
Angus Morgan?
You and he were once partners in Istanbul, I believe.
Well, what about it?
Mr. Jordan, I've been trailing him for over a month.
Well, then stick to him. Why trail me?
A short time ago, I lost him. I have reason to believe he is now in Cairo. At first, I hoped that you would unwittingly lead me to his hiding place. Perhaps even your Café Tambourine.
Want to stay with that story or try another one?
Mr. Jordan, would $500 be a decent sum for Angus Morgan's address?
You can have it for free. Angus Morgan's been dead for 3 months. Now you take it from there.
$1,000, then?
Look, I'll play it once more. Angus Morgan is dead.
Not dead, my friend, but very much alive.
All right, let's say I buy your story for the moment. Why is Angus's address worth all that dough?
You are very cute, Mr. Jordan. Well?
You have the dough with you?
Certainly not. It's hardly the place for a financial transaction. Shall we say your cafe in 2 hours?
Let's say that.
I'll have the money there. You will carry out your part of the bargain?
I didn't make a bargain.
I think you will. In 2 hours, Mr. Jordan, at the Tambourine.
I watched Brahms fade off up the street and then detoured by way of the Cairo News Gazette. It was true. Angus Morgan and I had once been partners in Istanbul.
Only Fader made one mistake. Angus and I were not friends, not even poor ones. Angus had double-crossed me and run out, owing me $15,000. If Angus was alive, only one thing interested me, my 15 grand. It took some fast talk and 20 piastres to get me into the newspaper morgue that time of night. But from then on, the night clerk was cooperative.
Hey, what was that name again?
Morgan. Angus Morgan.
Oh, yeah. Moody, You know, I wouldn't mind this night job if it wasn't for my wife. You married?
No. There was a story in the paper about his death about 3 months ago.
Don't ever get married, not if you work nights. What did you say that name was? Morris?
No, Morgan.
Now, take my wife. I was once told what happened.
That's the one I want right there.
No, that's Morgan, Angus Morgan.
Give it to me.
Okay. What can I say to her? She wouldn't believe me anyhow.
Angus Morgan, killed in mysterious explosion, salvaging operation, off the coast of Ras El Hod.
Yeah, then she says, why can't an alert, energetic man like me get a day job?
Sure looks dead, all right.
She's just that way.
Huh?
My wife.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for everything. Here, file this back under Rocky Jordan.
Sure. Good night, Mr. Morgan.
I decided to make one more call before keeping my date with Fader Bronze at the tambourine. The authorities seemed sure Angus Morgan was dead. But if he was alive and in Cairo, he was here for one reason. A reason named Sabina. She wasn't too much to look at now, but at one time she was the toast of Istanbul. These days she ran a Turkish bath near the Sharia El Mudafar. It was late, but her office door was open and the sign said, come in. So I did.
I can't believe it. When can I see him?
He's waiting at the Sharon Sanitarium.
Philip, wait.
Hello, Sabina. Did I interrupt something?
Rocky Jordan.
Yeah, we meet again, Sabina, like old times.
Don't tell me you want to lose weight.
No. There's enough hot air over at the Cafe Tambourine to keep me in shape. I'd like a word in private with you, Sabina, as soon as you're through here.
Why, I
am in no hurry, Sabina. So suppose you go ahead and see what Mr. Jordan wants. I will wait for you.
Why, that's very kind of you, Mr. Tournay.
Yeah, thanks. We'll only be a minute.
Yes, Rocky?
Who's the overgrown Frenchman?
Oh, Mr. Tournay was arranging for me to give someone a massage at the sanitarium. Please, Rocky, what do you want?
Sabina, what do you hear from Angus Morgan?
Angus? What are you talking about? You know
I've got a hunch he's alive.
What kind of a cruel joke is this?
I got reasons for believing it.
Rocky, I know how you hated Angus for double-crossing you. What good can this do you? Can't you let the past sleep?
Still do anything for Angus, wouldn't you?
Get out of here, Rocky.
Sure, Sabina.
Get out!
I got out. If Sabina was putting on an act, she wasn't doing a good job of it. But I knew my visit with her was a sure way of making Angus show his hand, if he was around. I went back to my Cafe Tambourine. It wasn't yet time for Fader Brahms to show up, so I sat down in my office to try and decide how I could handle him. Hello.
Hello. Is this Mr. Jordan?
Yeah?
Good. I want to speak to you, Mr. Jordan. It is very important.
Who is this?
Oh, yeah. We have never met. My name is Svensson.
Svensson?
Jan Svensson.
Oh, naturally.
Mr. Jordan, I saw you talking to a man named Fader Brahms.
Nice of you to tell me.
I don't know what he offered to pay for information leading to Angus Morgan, but I can guarantee you he will double his price.
I didn't know a dead man was worth so much.
Mr. Jordan, a man does not yoke when he is 40 fathoms under.
Look, drop the salty talk and get to the point, huh?
I am staying at the Hotel Mala, room 6. Will you come see me right away?
How much money did you say?
Sure we can strike a bargain.
Well, then get ready to bid, Svensson. You got competition. I hung up knowing that Fader Brahms wasn't the only one who'd been following me. Add one Jan Svensson. I figured Fader and his appointment could wait. Two heads were better than one, and if my 15 grand was around, I wanted to be sure of it. The Hotel Malau wasn't far, and I was there in 5 minutes. Room 6 was on the first floor. There was a light on inside the room, and I knocked on Jan Svensson's door. No answer. I tried the door, but it was locked. So I called the hotel manager, and we went in.
Oh, what has happened? That bed does not belong in the center of the room, and the dresser upside down.
It looks like somebody went through here with a bulldozer.
Oh, there has been a fight. But Mr. Swenson's clothes are still here.
Yeah, a few of them.
Yes. Oh, what are these?
Well, heavy rubber gloves, like a deep sea diver's, maybe. Nice and new.
Oh, this is terrible. Dust all over everything.
Yeah, even the phone.
We must call the police.
Yeah, do that. I left the hotel manager wringing his hands and got outside. I checked my watch. It was time for my date with Fader Brahms at the tambourine. And this time I really had some questions. As I turned to go, I felt something tugging at my coattail. It was a small native boy. He handed me a white envelope and dodged away into the crowd. I opened the letter, and it read, Mr. Jordan, before you see Angus, see me. I will meet your price. Signed, Captain Maury. Address, 62 Fernier Road. It looked like time for me to tally the score. First on base was Fader Brahms. Next, Jan Swenson. Now coming up to bat, Captain Maury. I figured that Fader could wait for me at the tambourine, and I caught a taxi to 62 Fernier Road. It had all the earmarks of a sedate rooming house. The skinniest woman I've ever seen opened the door.
I'm Mrs. Phipps. May I help?
Yes, I'm Rocky Jordan.
Shh! You'll have to keep your voice down. My guests have been asleep for hours.
Oh, sorry. Captain Maury's expecting me.
Captain Maury? You don't say so. Well, I can't imagine...
Look, I got a letter from him.
Please.
I've got to see him tonight.
I'm so angry I could scream. It couldn't have been 10 minutes ago. He skipped out of here bag and package. Out the window, if you please. And not paying me 1 cent for his board and room.
Take his clothes with him?
Yes. Everything except these awful upper boots. Here, you can have them.
Forgot his sea boots. Better give them to the police.
The police will be here. I've already called them.
Oh, just one more thing. What did Captain Maury look like?
Simply horrible. Grotesque and horrible.
Oh, thanks. I left Mrs. Phipps standing there, a big new sea boot in each hand, and moved out onto the dark street. I got to the nearest payphone and called Chris at the tambourine. He said nobody resembling Fader Brahms had made an appearance there. We were both late for our appointment. Now, there was something else in my mind as I left the phone booth. I wondered if my visit with Sabina was going to pay off. And then it did. The shots were wild, and there were holes in the wall all around me. I dropped to the ground, rolled up in a dark corner. The guy with the gun must have thought he got me because he took off down a side street. He was big, but he ran like a scared gazelle. I was up and after him, but when I got to the corner, he was out of sight. I let him go. Anyhow, I had one answer. The seed I had planted with Sabina had finally blossomed.
Rocky Jordan returns in just a moment. On CBS, My Friend Irma is now one of the most popular comedies on the air, and the two characters, Irma and Jane, are familiar to millions. You'll enjoy Irma to her last dumb remark on My Friend Irma, following CBS Radio Theater Monday night. Now, back to Rocky Jordan with tonight's story, Strangers 3.
Angus Morgan was supposed to have died 3 months ago. That's what the record said. But when three men named Fader Brahms, Jan Swenson, and Captain Maury came to Cairo looking for him and said he was alive, I was interested. Angus owed me $15,000, and I like money. My visit with Angus's old girlfriend, Sabina, paid off on the nose. When shots started flying, I knew Angus was close by. Back in Sabina's office, the fellow named Tournier mentioned the Sharon Sanitarium, and Sabina hadn't covered it too well. So the next day being Sunday, I invested in 12 roses and paid the Sharon a visit. On the third floor, I hit pay dirt. I swung a door open, and there, propped up in bed playing chess with Philip Tournier, was Angus Morgan.
Rocky.
I brought you some flowers, Angus.
Shut the door. How did you find me, Rocky?
The telephone book.
Same old Rocky.
Is he your finger man?
Meet Philip Tournier, my bodyguard.
We've already met twice.
Twice, Mr. Jordan?
Once at Sabina's and once outside our phone booth. You're a bum shot, Tournier.
I'm afraid you are mistaken.
Skip it. Listen, Angus.
Rocky, how did you know I was still living?
Three men told me.
Three?
Well, count them. Vader Brahms, Jan Svensson, and Captain Morey.
No.
You're having a relapse, Angus. Maybe I better call a nurse.
Stop it, Rocky. They say they're alive.
Breathing, too. Right down your thick neck.
They know where I am.
Not yet, Angus. But they're each offering me a few thousand for that information.
I'm beginning to see what you mean. Seems there was a debt.
I'll refresh your memory. $15,000.
Rocky, I'll pay you every cent if you'll promise to leave immediately and forget you've been here.
As far as I'm concerned, Angus, you're resting where you so justly deserve. Got it with you?
Yes. Philip, this is just between Rocky and me. So if you leave the room...
But, Angus, you are sure...
I can trust Rocky. You can get me some cigars while you're out. Go on.
Very well. I will be back shortly.
Well, Rocky, it's been a long time.
The money, Angus, remember?
Very well. You hand me that valise on the lower shelf of the cart there.
Oh, sure. Well, feels loaded.
I'll have a little left. Yeah. Here you are. $15,000. Count it if you like.
Don't worry, I'll be back if it's not all here. Angus, I'm overwhelmed.
You're paid. Just keep your promise and get out.
Sure, I know when I'm not wanted. Just one more thing.
Yes?
Tell Tournier to stop using me for a clay pigeon or I'll have your three friends up here next.
I can assure you, Rocky, you'll never hear from me again.
What happened?
He never heard from me again. That's what happened.
Apparently, headset is still not working. All right. Well, we'll figure that out.
All right.
No worries.
No worries. As
part one of Rocky Jordan comes to a conclusion, yep, that's got Casablanca all over it.
All over it, yep. That's okay.
In Cairo.
That's a nice little adventure.
Not Istanbul. Yes.
Not Istanbul, and not Casablanca, but, you know, But it works.
Istanbul, not Constantinople. Istanbul, not Constantinople.
I just heard that somewhere.
That whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah, a strange echo in here, yeah.
Wait a second. The guy from Jordan said what? He was in Cairo, not Istanbul.
Right.
Not to mention Constantinople. Yes, okay.
Yes.
I don't know. Beware of camels. That's all I can say. I don't know.
That's right. That is one of my favorite sayings from
animals?
The sea. I think it was the Golden Voyage of Sinbad. Trust in Allah.
For the camels?
But tie up your
camels. In this.
But tie your camel first. Oh!
Tie up your camel.
Oh, okay.
I must have gotten
Allah, but tie up your camel.
Right. I actually must have gotten the Americanized version of that, and I love it. Trust in God, but tie your camel first. And I don't know if that's the same thing going on there.
I'm just quoting the movie, man.
Oh, okay.
If that is a real saying, I don't know.
I don't know.
I would never.
Yeah.
I would never quote a movie for fear of copyright infringement myself.
Oh, well.
The end point is tie your camel first.
What are they going to sue me for a shiny new nickel?
Well, then you won't be able to play the jukebox.
That's right.
No.
Which maybe we'll have time for later, the jukebox here, but still got a whole lot of radio.
Wait, you guys are using nickels? Because I've been using slugs.
Well, no wonder it gets jammed up.
Keep them out of my garden.
Dale, it's his fault.
Yeah.
It's his fault.
Don't let your camel know about it. Yeah.
Blame Gar and Blog Talk. There you go.
And Chernobyl.
And trust in Allah, but tie up your camel. No, I like that saying. It means, you know, kind of go with the flow, but watch your back kind of a thing, you know?
Well, the guiding hand is there, but tie your camel, you know.
Yeah, exactly. The guidance is there, but you got to take care of your own business, too. Yep.
Right.
Yeah,
you
but
know,
if you watch your back,
your
you need...
Car,
if you watch back, you need two mirrors.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How big is your back,
mirrors on your camel. Why not?
No, that was...
not as big as my front.
Yeah, well, there. Thank
whoa,
goodness.
Whoa, there's something we didn't need to know.
So, you know, back in the day when they had that, when that came out, you know, your camo was your car, and also possibly your shade from sunlight. So,
or
yeah, you wanted to hang on to your camo.
Or your cigarette.
And,
if you don't,
or your cigarette.
If you don't,
camo light.
If you don't, you'd have to walk a mile for your camo.
There you go.
Yeah.
Let's wrap up.
Yeah. Because you're
Rocky Jordan.
Your camo won't walk a mile for you.
The clock is ticking. Time for the
what's
conclusion
radio
of Strangers 3 from Rocky.
Angus put his valise back where it was, and I got out. I walked slowly down the stairs, trying to decide what I was going to tell Fate of Brahms. He still hadn't kept his date with me. Well, I had my dough. I promised Angus to keep my mouth shut, and that's the way it was going to be. I just about reached the main floor when Bedlam broke loose. It was coming from the third floor. I raced back up the steps, two at a time. Down the hall, a crowd was gathering in front of Angus Morgan's room. I saw Philip Tournier come out of the elevator, and we reached the room together. We pushed through the crowd of Sunday visitors and into the room. And there was Sabina. Sabina, what is...
Pull yourself together, Sabina. What happened?
I walked into the room, and there he was.
There's no doubt about it this time.
Angus is dead. Stabbed to death.
From there on, things moved fast. Sam Sabaya, captain of the Cairo police, took over. A very thorough man, he rounded up everyone connected with the case. Down at headquarters, I was kept cooling my heels while Sam talked to Sabina and Tournier. He called me in last.
Well, Jordan, I am afraid you have a great deal to explain.
Well, by this time, Sam, I thought you'd have the murder solved.
Jordan, this time, let's get to the point.
I suppose Sabina told you I had it in for Angus Morgan.
That is correct.
And Tournier happened to mention that I threatened Angus.
Just one more thing. In Angus Morgan's room at the sanitarium was a valise containing $300,000.
$300,000?
He's missing. I believe $15,000 of it is in your pocket.
Tournier did talk, didn't he?
May I see it?
Sure.
Thank you.
Hey, what are you doing, Sam? That's my dough.
We shall see. Right now, it is Exhibit A. Where is the rest of the money, Jordan?
How should I know? Well, now, wait, Sam. You don't think...
Would you like to tell me everything now, Jordan?
Of course. I was as sure as anybody else that Angus Morgan was dead. Then people came to me looking for him, said he was alive and in Cairo.
What people?
Well, first a guy in a felt hat and tweeds named Fader Brahms.
Yeah.
Then Jan Swenson and Captain Morey. They both skipped out, but I'll give you their former addresses. You better look him up, Sam.
Getting back to Angus Morgan, how did you find him?
Philip Tournier let his whereabouts out of the bag when I went to see Sabina. Oh, by the way, an hour later, somebody tried to kill me. I think it was Tournier. But about that 15 grand, Angus owed it to me.
I will do my best to find this threesome you speak of. But, Jordan, the facts remain incriminating.
I was halfway out of the building when the murder took place.
Save that part of your story for the inquest tomorrow. We will notify you of the time.
Okay, Sam, we'll play it your way.
Good night, Jordan.
Good night, Sam. Oh, and by the way, when you give me back my money, I'm going to buy you a present.
Oh? What, Jordan?
A can of oil. Your chair squeaks. I went out into the street, and when the air hit me, I knew I was sweating. If we were all released, that meant Sam was playing cat and mouse with us. And everything pointed in my direction, much too conveniently. I had to act quickly while I still had a few hours of freedom. I had a hunch the police were following me, but I didn't care. I had nothing to hide. Sabina was first on my list. She took my bait once before, and she might again. When I reached Sabina's Turkish bath, she was already there.
Rocky, what are you doing here? Who let you in?
I've got to talk to you.
Haven't you caused enough trouble? Leave me alone.
Who's Fader Brahms? Jan Swenson, Captain Morey.
Why don't you ask Philip Tournay?
Well, I will. Where is he?
He's staying at an apartment over the open-air market on Farran Street.
Oh, thanks. I got a good hunch who killed your boyfriend, Sabina. Maybe you have, too.
Who did it, Rocky?
That's what I got to find out, Sabina. Or I may be next. I went to the open-air market on Farran Street. Philip Tournier's room was on the second floor. I knocked. When he finally opened it, he was either out of breath or awfully scared.
Jordan!
I'm coming in, Tournier.
Yes, yes, of course. I thought you were in jail.
Yeah, weren't we all?
There is a policeman watching my apartment.
Two of them now. One for each of us. I'd start leveling with me, Tournier. You tried to kill me last night, didn't you?
I could have, Rocky. But I shot wild, purposely.
I was Angus Morgan's bodyguard, not his finger man.
When did Sabina arrive at the sanitarium Sunday?
I do not know.
You ever hear of Fader Brahms?
Why, I have never seen him.
Well, try these for size. Jan Swenson, Captain Morey.
Angus, Fader, and Swenson hired Captain Morey's boat. They salvaged an army payroll from an American freighter that had been sunk during the war.
Where?
The coast of Ras El Hanf. The four of them were supposed to split the money between them.
Knowing Angus, he changed his mind, wanted all of it.
That is right. After they had hauled up $300,000 of the money, Angus sneaked off the boat, leaving a time bomb behind. Everyone was reported missing at sea, including Angus.
Well, they're not missing now. They're in Cairo.
They will kill me.
Sure, if you took the $300,000.
But I did not. What can I do?
Just sit tight and don't talk to anybody. Especially not to Sabina. Tournier was halfway to his phone before I got out the door, but I didn't mind. At least now I had something to work with, if I could believe anything he said. I went out onto the street wondering if I'd ever see Fader Brahms again, or Svensson, or Captain Morey. Why would anyone kill Angus, take the money, and stay around Cairo for the police to get at? I stood there trying to figure my next move, and then it was figured for me. The door of a car waiting at the curb swung open.
Get in, Jordan.
Fader Brahms. Sure I'm not intruding.
Get in, I said.
Okay. Take that shiny cannon out of my face. It hurts my eyes.
I may have to use it. I want that $300,000, Jordan.
You haven't got it?
No. I want every cent of it.
Tell me something, Fader. How did it happen Angus Morgan didn't kill you like he planned?
Perhaps I knew him too well. We were on the salvage boat, all four of us, lying 2 miles offshore. One night I heard a sound, went up on deck, and I heard oars fading into the fog. It was Angus Morgan taking all the money we'd salvaged. Before I could do anything, there was a blast. I came to on a small vessel sailing for East Africa. It took me 2 months to get back. And I've been looking for Angus ever since.
I see.
Now you see why I want that money, Jordan.
Why don't you look up Jan Swenson or Captain Morey? Why pin it on me?
I think you have it. Jordan, I swear I'll kill you right here.
Oh, maybe not after you take a look out the back window.
Where? Black car?
Keep watching it. The police, Fader. They've been tailing me all day.
Perhaps you are not lying.
Now listen to some sense. You want the money. I want to get the guy who killed Angus Morgan to clear myself. We can get him together.
You know who killed Morgan?
Yeah. Captain Morey. I'm sure I saw him at the sanitarium.
Captain Morey. Of course. What's your plan?
Well, first we split up. Shake the police off our trails. Meet me at the corner of Sika and El Modar, right by the old tower.
Why there?
I think I know his hideout. You'll be there in 30 minutes.
Very well, Jordan. I will be there.
I waited till Fader Brahms drove off around the corner, and I got to a phone called Sam Sabaya. It wasn't long till Sam's sleepy voice came on.
Sabaya speaking.
Listen, Sam, I think I got your man.
What is this?
Captain Morey. If you'll be at Sika and El Modar in half an hour, I'll produce him.
Jordan, go home and go to bed.
Sam, listen to me.
But I am glad you called, though. The inquest will be tomorrow at 11. Will you be there, or should I send an escort?
Sam, I told you where to be. Now, don't let me down.
Good night, Jordan.
Listen, Sam. Sam! Okay, I'll go it alone. Sam was in no cooperative mood, but it was too late to change my plan now. My watch said 11 o'clock. That meant I had just 12 hours to dig up somebody to take my place at the inquest. I walked the whole way to our rendezvous spot, through the twisting narrow streets that led to the old tower, a familiar dismal landmark in the lower quarter of Cairo. I finally stopped at the tower. No one was there, but I was a couple of minutes early. Laughter sounded from an upper window across the way. It stopped, a light went out, and all was darkness and quiet. I leaned against the wall and waited. Once I thought I saw a figure in the shadows. I glanced back and it was gone. You know, shadows play tricks sometimes. Then I heard it, a quick rustling motion that resolved into a figure as I turned. I felt it coming, but I was too late. Pain stabbed my right shoulder.
I tried to move, but the knife had me pinned to the wall. Through a blinding fight to keep my senses, I heard a confused sound. A pistol blazed almost in my face, and everything mixed into a whirlpool of shouts and footsteps and went spinning off into nothing. With Rocky Jordan right in the middle.
Rocky Jordan will be back in a matter of seconds with the ending of tonight's story. Here's a mic memo from CBS for Monday night listening. The Foxes of Harrow comes to you Monday night on CBS Radio Theater with lovely Maureen O'Hara and John Hodiak. Don't miss The Foxes of Harrow, CBS Radio Theater, Monday night at 7 in California and 6 elsewhere in the West. Now back to Rocky Jordan for the ending of tonight's story.
When I opened my eyes, the darkness of the night under the old tower had changed to all white. White walls, white sheets, white bedshirt. The sun was coming in the west window, and seated beside my bed, looking me over like a hound looks over a fresh bone, was Sam Sabaya.
Well, Jordan, you missed the inquest.
Oh, you're breaking my heart, Sam. Where am I?
In the Charon Sanitarium.
Oh, the Charon again. Why here?
We thought you might feel right at home.
Well, I'm not. Ooh. What happened?
Only a knife wound. Your shoulder will heal. You were more fortunate than Angus Morgan.
Yeah, and all that shooting was the police. Sam, I thought you weren't coming to the party last night.
Oh, Jordan, you wronged me. Feder Brahms is now in the Cairo jail. A little worse for the wear.
Okay. Now, Sam, when do I get my 15 grand back? Remember, Exhibit A?
Jordan, you promised to lead me to Captain Morey. Where is he?
In jail. Captain Morey, Jan Swenson, Feder Brahms. They're all the same man.
It's no wonder we couldn't find the other two. When did you know this?
I should have known from the beginning. Feder was too elaborate with his plans. I figured he invented the other two to keep me on my toes, make sure I didn't lose interest. Mm-hmm. And if a murder rap came up, the police would be out looking for Swenson and Morey, dead men.
But, Jordan, that is hardly proof.
No, I wasn't sure till Feder Brahms came to me and demanded the money. I told him to ask Swenson and Captain Morey, but Feder didn't bat an eye. Why? Because he knew they didn't exist.
No doubt they were actually killed in the salvage boat.
Sure. So when I told Feder I'd produce Captain Morey, he knew I was lying. He decided it was time to get rid of me. Just one thing I don't understand. Sam, about my 15,000...
What don't you understand?
Well, if Feder Brahms killed Angus Morgan and took his money, why didn't he get out of Cairo?
Now, very good question, Jordan. Brahms has confessed the murder, but he did not get the money.
What?
Sabina came into Angus Morgan's room too quickly after the murder. In his haste to escape, Feder left the very thing he was after.
Then he really did think I had it. But where is the money?
But that is a very strange thing, Jordan. After we brought you back here last night, the money was found in the third floor laboratory. How it got there, I don't know.
Sam, of course. Angus set the money satchel on the lower shelf of that little cart the nurses wheel around. It was still there when she wheeled it out.
I see. Perhaps during the confusion after the murder. Well, that about settles everything.
Oh, no, Sam. What about my 15 grand? My dough?
Well, you see, Jordan, there will probably be an estate. You will have to put in a claim for it.
Of all the... Hey, nurse! Nurse!
Jordan, can I get something for you?
Yes, Sam, a first-class lawyer.
Calm yourself, Jordan. You will get your money. You always do.
Rocky Jordan is presented from Columbia Square in Hollywood and stars Jack Moyles in the title role. Tonight's story was written by Bernard Girard and was produced and directed by Cliff Howell with original music by Milton Charles. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Rocky Jordan.
It is.
And real quick, while we have the time, what little we have. Erie House Radio proudly presents Scar's Moral of the Story. The downside to picking your own death and being alive is staying that way.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie, the spirits are about to speak.
About to speak.
That they are.
That they are.
Eeny, beanie, chili beanie, now I want some weenies.
Okay.
Okay, on that happy note, we got just enough time to sneak in Rogue's Gallery, The Redheaded Stranger.
The singing detective before he was a singing detective, and just a detective who got knocked out every week.
There we go.
The hallucinating detective.
Yep, let's get it going with part one, originally broadcast.
June 13th, 1946.
I gotcha.
The F.W. Fitch Company presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Laugh a while, let a song be your style, you Fitch shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, save your hair, you Fitch shampoo.
The F.W. Fitch Company, makers of Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo and Fitch's shaving creams, presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Rogue speaking. You know, I'm a man who loves sunshine, in or out of orange juice. And the only place that has more sunshine per square inch than the Sahara Desert is the San Fernando Valley. San Fernando seems to be the place where everybody, including some of the healthiest gophers in the world, makes his home but me. I've withstood the blandishments of hundreds of brick-red real estate men who have offered me membership in that clan of plaid-shirted, tight blue-jeaned, high-heel-booted fraternity known as the San Fernando Valley Ranchers. Ranchers. Yes, sir. The San Fernando Valley has ranches that are thicker than any place in the world. There are at least two on every acre. Well, anyway, I was driving around out there this Sunday evening. It was swimming weather. And I happened to remember that my friend Joe Dale had a half-acre spread in the neighborhood with a quarter-acre swimming pool. So I stopped at the Antlers on the gate, rang the ship's bell hanging there, but nobody answered. I thought maybe Joe was in the pool in the rear, so I opened the door and walked in. Then I felt like walking out again, because I saw Joe Dale lying there, making a red stain on the white living room rug. Very defunct. I walked over to him and gazed down at him. Then I heard the footsteps behind me and did a half turn in time to see oblivion whistling down on my head. Oh. Everything went red, white, and blue. And I was whirling like a top. Oh. It made me dizzy whirling like that. I couldn't stand the shrieking of the wind as it whistled past my ears. I concentrated on stopping so hard that I could hear my teeth gritting. But no go. Then I thought of you, Gore. And suddenly I heard his pleasant voice.
Come on, sheepy. Welcome home to Cloudy.
Oh, my head.
Looking, ain't he?
Wait till
he sees you.
Ugor, who is this ancient feather merchant with you?
Well, Rogie, I warned you. This is her father.
You mean the little dame's father?
Is he talking about my daughter? Yes, sir.
What's he doing with that gun? He couldn't pull the trigger with a tractor.
Will you see, Chiefy?
The young whippersnapper who's advising you go here.
feel good.
Rocky, you're making things tough for me. Her father has a gun.
I'm not going to stand for much more fooling around, you car.
Oh, make him stop talking. His voice sounds like a grindstone on a grindstone.
Now, looky here, young fella. I'm a gentleman of the old school. And if my daughter is half-witted enough to want to marry this good-for-nothing new girl...
Oh, no, no. I'm not going to let my alter ego get married. Ugor can't get married.
Oh, that's a mighty selfish way of looking at things, Rocky.
Oh, look. Look, my head. I don't feel good. I came up here for a rest.
Now, we're going to have a serious talk, Mr. Earl. My daughter's happiness is a mighty important thing to me.
Oh, shut up. Shut up. Shut up. I can't stand that silly voice of yours.
But he's right, Rocky. You can't stand in the way of our happiness. It's not fair. It's only normal to want to get married.
Now, look at it from our point of view, Mr. Elk. Here's a couple of...
I can't stand it. I'm getting out of here.
Grab him.
Come back here. Come back here.
When I came to, I was looking right in Joe Dale's face, which was inches from mine. The inside of my head was still whirling and clanking like a washing machine, but it didn't take me long to get back up to date. I remembered I had dropped in at Joe Dale's house for a quick swim and found Joe stretched out on the living room floor, shot. Then I remembered that swishing sound, which always means another bump on my head. And now my feet felt like they were in diver's shoes as I got up and looked the situation over. The murder gun was lying there by the side of Joe's body, and there was a billfold on the floor by the door. Being the kind of a guy I am, I picked up the billfold first. It was Joe Dale's, and I put it in my pocket. Then I took my handkerchief and carefully picked up the gun. I was bending over Joe, gun in hand, when I heard a voice behind me.
Joe! Joe!
A beautiful dame had walked in on me and caught me bending over the corpse, gun in hand. She fainted. I ran over to her. Hey. Hey, come out of it, lady. Lady, hey, come on. Oh, come on. Oh, Lord, everything happened to me. Come on, come out of it. Open your eyes. But she didn't. And while I was working on her, a man showed up in the open door. He took one look at the tableau and dived for the murder gun, which I dropped. He pointed the gun at my third vest button and said,
"Just stay right where you are. I know how to shoot this thing, and I'm holding you for the police. Your partner got away, but I'll..."
"Look, mister. Look, I am the police. I
know who you are. You're Richard Rowe, the private investigator. You've been mixed up in plenty of shady deals before. What did you do to my wife?"
"Is this your wife?"
"Yes. What's the matter with her?"
"Well, she came in, saw Joe Dale's body, and fainted."
Barry. Is that you?"
"Yes, dear. Now, don't worry. Oh. I'm here, and I'll take care of you."
This man, he was standing over Joe's body with a gun in his hand when I came in. He's a killer, Barry. Be careful."
"Don't worry, dear. I have him covered. Stay right there, Rogue. I'm a nervous man, and I advise you not to move while I'm phoning the police."
We'll return to our story in just a moment. First, time was when heavy perfumed oils were considered the thing for pleasant-smelling hair. Now, of course, we know that the clean, delicate fragrance imparted to the hair by Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo is much more the modern idea of good grooming. This clear, golden liquid shampoo makes an abundance of creamy lather that does an efficient job of cleansing the hair. It removes dust, perspiration, oily film, and all unpleasant scalp odors. Leaves the hair with a gloriously fresh, clean feeling. And Fitch's saponified shampoo is made from mild coconut and pure vegetable oils. Thus, you can use it as often as you like, because Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo does not rob your hair of its natural oils. Always leaves it soft, lustrous, and manageable. Next time you're at your barber or beauty shop, ask for a professional application of Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo, or buy an economical bottle at your drug or toilet goods counter. Look for the bottle with the bright yellow label.
Now back to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. I couldn't very well blame Perry Stevens or his wife for thinking I just put the kiss of death on Joe Dale. Mrs. Stevens came in and saw me bending over the body with a murder gun in my hand, promptly fainted. And so when Perry arrived, the floor was cluttered with bodies, and I was the only stranger. He picked up the killer's gun and held me at the point of it until the cops arrived. Lieutenant Urban of Homicide was in charge, as usual. He seemed a little bit discouraged with me.
Well, Rogie, what's your story?
Urban, it's a simple one. I just dropped in here to take a swim and found Joe Dale dead.
Why didn't you report the murder to Homicide?
I didn't have a chance. The killer was hiding here in the room. He slapped me silly and escaped while I was out. How do you think I got this cut on my head, shaving?
I never know about you.
There were two of them, Lieutenant. I saw one of them run out from behind this house. A big man, red-haired, rough. This man here, this Richard Rogue, had an accomplice.
When I came in, Mr. Rogue was bending over the body with a gun. That gun in his hand. I almost caught him in the act.
How about it, Rogie?
Well, I was bending over the body all right. I'd just come to. I was checking up.
Why didn't you call Homicide when you came to?
I was going to, Urban, but this dame here walked in on me, screamed, fainted.
I demanded to arrest this man.
Oh, wait a minute. What were you doing here?
I came over to...
Joe is an old friend. We just came over to take him to dinner. Don't try to implicate a couple of law-abiding people in your crime.
You and your wife came together?
Of course.
Then how come she came in ahead of you?
I hesitated when I saw that man run out from behind the house. Lieutenant, do I have to stand here and let this murderer cross-question me?
Mrs. Stevens, you and your husband came here together?
Yes. We had a dinner date with Joe.
Did you see this man run away from the house?
No, I came right straight inside.
Okay. Look, Rogie, you'd better come down to headquarters with me right now. We've got some talking to do.
Urban, I'll be down in an hour. I want to go to the emergency hospital and have my head put back on. I got to go home and get a suit without these red polka dots. Then I'll be down.
I demand that you put Rogue under arrest, Lieutenant.
Now, take it easy, Mr. Stevens. I've had a little more experience with this sort of thing than you have. See you in an hour, Rogie. Be there.
That gash on my head had cost me a lot of blood, and I was a little woozy as I left the ex-residence of the late Joe Dale. I drove turtle speed to the emergency hospital, where the doc made a few insulting remarks about me getting scars on the scars on my poor head. And then I went home. I walked in the door, and an arm went around my throat. A crooked elbow squeezed my Adam's apple until I choked. I felt a hand sneak into my inside breast pocket and lift that wallet I'd picked up on the floor beside Joe Dale's body. The elbow squeezed a little tighter, 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 and I had a horrifying sensation of bursting lungs. And then the elbow released me, and I fell to the floor to the accompaniment of departing footsteps. I was still lying there when Urban walked in through the open door.
I got worried about you when you didn't show up, Rogie. What happened?
I don't know. I guess I just got faint and flopped over here. I lost a lot of blood, you know.
Better take care of yourself, Rogie. I don't want to lose you. You like talking?
Oh, sure, but I don't know anything to talk about.
Maybe you'd like to talk about a murder.
Well, and tell me, did you get a line on that red-headed guy that was seen leaving Joe's house?
I've got a description out on him. Nothing's happened yet.
How about Mr. and Mrs. Stevens? Check up on them?
Yeah. Stevens is the personnel director for an airplane company. Pays his bills promptly, has money in the bank, lives within his income. And he's been a friend of Joe Dale since college days. They're clean. That leaves you and a big red-headed guy in the finals. One of you killed Joe Dale. I don't think you did it, but I could get an indictment against you in 20 minutes for the evidence I have.
No, but I didn't kill him. I didn't like him well enough. Well, I guess it's up to me to find the big red-headed guy, huh? You checked the gun?
No soap. The number was filed off, and the only fingerprints on it were Stevens. And they got on it when he was holding you.
Yeah, I was there when it happened, remember? Oh, brother. Brother, do I feel weary. Well, there's one thing I'll swear to. Mrs. Stevens was not expecting to find Dale murdered.
You really went out like a butler on Thursday night.
You know, Rogie, I'm a cop. And the fact that you and I understand each other doesn't make any difference to the commissioner.
Yeah, I know.
Joe Dale was a pretty prominent character. Lots of connections. Now, the commissioner expects a quick pinch. And with our friends, the Stevens, down there at City Hall, swearing that they saw you standing over the body with a practically smoking gun in your hand, well, it looks like it's going to be you I put the arm on.
Oh, but you know I didn't kill him, Urban. Why would I want to kill a guy like that?
Yes, I know you didn't kill him, but the newspapers are on the old man. He's on the chief, and the chief's on me. I'm going to have to pinch you, Rogie.
You're a great pal, Urban. But look, if you pinch me, they'll never get a conviction. You know that you can't get a conviction without a motive.
I know that, but you've made a lot of enemies around headquarters, Rogie. They see a chance to give you a bad time, and they don't want to miss it. You can see the spot I'm in.
Yeah. Now, look, Urban. Give me 24 hours to get the guy that pulled the boom off Joe Dale. Just 24 hours, and I'll have him for you.
Oh, that's whistling in the dark, Rogie.
Yeah, with a 10 whistle. But just give me a chance at it anyway. Maybe I'll be lucky.
Okay. It'll probably put me back on a beat, but I'll play along with you. You've got 24 hours, Rogue. Then, don't make me come after you. Come in and give yourself up.
The deal? Yeah, it's a deal. You're a good cop, Urban. I know you're sticking your neck out like a turtle at feeding time, and believe me, I won't let you down.
Okay, Rogue, I'll get out. Better get some sleep.
You look awful. I can't afford the luxury of sleeping. I got work to do.
Okay, Rogue, call me if you need me. I'll be around. Lots of luck. You'll need it. Hello?
Hello, is Lieutenant Urban there?
Just a minute. Hey, Urban.
Yeah, for me?
Yeah. He'll be right here. Hang on. Mighty excited little man on the other end of this.
Yeah? Hello. Urban speaking.
Lieutenant Urban, this is Perry Stevens.
Yeah? And what do you want?
That man, that red-headed man that I saw running away from Joe's house this afternoon.
Yes.
He came here tonight to my house.
What did you do?
He came here to kill me, but I shot him. He's dead. Please come out at once.
I'll be right there. Now, don't move a thing till I get there. Come on, Rogie.
Yeah, that's right. Part one, gang, of a nice story from Rogue's Gallery.
A whole lot of radio.
With that in mind.
A whole lot of radio.
With that in mind, let's wrap up Rogue's Gallery, Red-Headed Stranger.
Well, this puts that eight ball I was behind over the corner pocket, doesn't it, Urban?
Yeah, looks like Stevens wrapped his case up for us.
And that makes me very happy. Oh, I wasn't looking forward to sweating it out in a jail of yours. No, I didn't have anything against that red-headed guy, but I'm never going to miss him.
Well, it takes me off the spot, too, you know.
Yeah, well, you don't have to be a hero in my corner. Oh, well, all's well that ends well, to coin a phrase.
It's right down this next block here.
Huh? Stevens must have a lot of cabbage, big houses in this neighborhood.
Yeah, I checked that. The wife's got money. Oh, there it is, that two-story white shop. There's the precinct prowl car in front. The boys are on the job.
Well, let's get with it.
Good evening, Lieutenant.
Hello, Bauer. Medical examiner here yet?
No, not yet. Precinct boys just got here.
Thanks. Come on, Rogie.
Well, this is quite a layout. Wife's got dough, huh?
Yeah, and Uncle left her plenty about a year ago.
Makes it nice for Perry.
Oh, what a mind.
Yeah, you know, someday Betty Callahan and I are going to have a chicken ranch out here in this valley.
Look, we're investigating a murder. That's serious business.
All right, Charlie, pick it up.
Hello, boys. Where is he?
Right in there, Lieutenant.
Thanks.
Well, Lieutenant, it's about time you were getting here.
We came as fast as we could, Stevens. Now, suppose you tell me what happened.
I'll be glad to. My wife and I got home tonight.
Where is your wife?
Is he any right to question me in that tone of voice, Lieutenant?
Where is your wife?
Why, the shock was too much for her. She's upstairs.
Don't blame her. She's had enough for today. Come on, what happened? You got him with that shotgun, eh?
Yes. I was frightened, terribly frightened. And as soon as I came home, I got my shotgun. I hunt a little, you know, and I put it here beside my chair. It was just a hunch.
Yeah?
The doorbell rang. My wife answered the door. We thought it was a neighbor. This red-headed man walked in. I recognized him at once. He was the man I'd seen run away from Joe's house. He had a gun. He was going to kill me. I suppose because I was the only eyewitness to the crime.
Well, that makes sense.
It certainly does. It's the truth. He turned to talk to my wife. I saw my chance. I shot him. There he is. Your murderer. I've never seen anybody killed before.
Well, he's sure dead.
Yeah. Ever see him before?
No, not that I know of. Hey, what are you doing, Rogie?
Oh, I'm just trying to get some identification on the guy, that's all. Let's take down. I thought... Uh-oh.
What's the matter?
Oh, an alligator billfold. I didn't expect to see one on this guy. And hey, Urban, this is Joe Dale's billfold. And it's full of dough. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, several $100 in it.
Yeah, that's the final piece of evidence.
Mm-hmm. I'll take care of it.
Well, there's the medical examiner, and the newspapers are about due to arrive. You've done a good night's work, Mr. Stevens. I want to thank you.
I'm not a man of violence. I'll never be able to forget this night.
There was something about that wallet that was as strange as the bride in black. Other identification on the body pegged the redhead as one Tom Church, recently of the Navy, now a resident of the Crane Hotel. I watched for my chance to give Urban and his minions the slip and faded away. I went to police headquarters and charged into the identification bureau on a dead run. I handed the sergeant in charge the wallet and asked him to dust it for fingerprints. Then I waited. When the sergeant came back, his jaw was stuck out like the business end of a snowplow, and there were icicles in his voice.
What's the deal, Rogie?
What's the matter with you? All I ask you to do is to give me the identification on the fingerprints you found on the billfold.
Yeah. Do you know whose prints I found, you wise private creep, do you? Yours. Only yours.
We'll return to our story in a moment. First, a word to the ladies. Did you ever make the remark that your hair never was manageable after a shampoo until it was time to wash it again? That's been the experience of many a woman. Well, you can have your hair immaculately clean, lustrous, and manageable, too. Try using Fitch's Saponified Coconut Oil Shampoo for your hair care. This shampoo is made from pure natural oils and leaves your hair soft and manageable even immediately after shampooing. Its creamy, fragrant lather never dries the hair, but cleanses gently, removing dirt, perspiration, and every trace of unpleasant scalp odors. Fitch's Saponified Shampoo brings out the gleaming, natural color highlights in your hair, too, and leaves it clean and fragrant. A special patented rinsing agent contained right in the shampoo leaves your hair sparkling clean and free from any dull, soapy film. Try Fitch's Saponified Coconut Oil Shampoo the next time you want an extra special beauty treat for your hair. Then use it regularly to keep your hair soft, fragrant, and lovely. Now back to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
The news that the only fingerprints on that billfold were mine turned on the floodlights. And one of my hunches picked up a hammer and started pounding against my skull. I left the billfold there for Urban and took off for the Crane Hotel to check up on the red-headed guy named Tom Church. The hotel was a fourth-class flea bag on Main Street. The clerk took a look at my buzzer and answered my questions. That's right, Shorty. I'm the law. And I want some answers. Now tell me, how long has Tom Church been registered here?
Tom Church, 3 days. He came in 3 days ago.
All right. Now let me see his phone calls.
Oh, we don't give out phone calls.
Now, don't lip me. Give them to me before I jump over that counter and stand on you while I pick them up.
Oh, okay. You look like just the kind of guy that could do it. I'll get them for you.
I checked the phone calls and found one of them had a message that was going to ring somebody's number for the surprise party. I thanked the clerk and drove to the valley. The pre-dawn gray made way for the sunshine just as I walked up the front walk at Dale's house. An elderly man walked around the next branch, pushing a lawnmower.
Hey, are you a policeman?
That's right, yes.
A horrible thing, that murder yesterday. Did they get the killer yet?
Well, I think so. Yeah. Were you home yesterday afternoon at the time of the killing?
Yeah, I wasn't paying much attention, you know. I heard the shot, but I thought it was a backfire,
Look, old-timer, I want you to tell me everything you saw and heard after that shot, will you?
Well, you see, I was sitting in my living room reading the evening paper, you know, and I saw you drive up. You sure you're a policeman, mister?
Why, yes, of course.
Yes, well, I'd like to see your credentials. You know, you were the first man I saw enter there.
All right, here's the dope on me. Here, yeah. The sheriff's office loves me. Yeah. There it is. Is that fine?
Yes. I've heard of you, Mr. Rogue. Well, after you drove up, the lady arrived and...
What do you want, Mr. Rogue?
Mrs. Stevens, I'm coming in. I want to talk with you.
No, come back later.
I'm sorry. Go on in and sit down.
What do you want?
Some answers. Sit down. Now, where's your husband?
Asleep. Nothing ever wakens him.
All right, let's get right to it, huh? What were you to Joe Dale?
I don't know what you mean.
Mrs. Stevens, you've been seeing Joe a lot, haven't you? Now, don't bother lying. I've got witnesses. You and Joe Dale were better friends than your husband knew, weren't you?
Well, no. I used to meet Joe once in a while to talk over investments he was making for me.
Uh-huh. At his house? In the afternoons, usually, huh?
Yes.
Mrs. Stevens, your husband killed Joe Dale. You lied when you said that the two of you had a dinner date with Joe last night. I just talked to your husband's secretary. He was supposed to be in San Francisco yesterday.
No.
Yes. But instead, he went out in the valley and killed Dale. I practically surprised him in the act. He got panicky, knocked me out, and ran.
No, he didn't. He didn't.
I can prove what I'm saying, Mrs. Stevens. You came up in your car alone. Your husband came up in a cab a few minutes later. He had to get back in to get that wallet and the gun to make the murder look like a robbery. And he picked the gun up so there'd be a reason for his fingerprints on it. Then he went to my apartment and collected the wallet after choking me half to death. Were you with him then?
You're just making this up. You can't prove it.
Mark, don't say any more. It's a little late for that, Stevens. You've bungled the job all the way through. And you won't be needing that gun.
Harry, don't shoot.
Give me that gun, Stevens. You'd be crazy to get in a shooting contest with me. You stay right where you are, Rogue. I'm not afraid to shoot. Marge, they can't make you appear against me. That's the law. If you stay with me... I'm coming after that gun, Stevens. You stay where you are, Rogue. Marge, stop looking at me like that. Nobody knows anything about what I did, but Rogue and...
No. No, Perry. You killed them. And I'm glad to get rid of you.
You... Marge, you can't. Don't sell me out.
I've been frightened to death ever since I've married to you. Take that gun away from him, Rogue. Take it away from him.
Give me the gun, Stephen.
Get away from me, Rogue.
Marge, you're going back on me. You can't do that, Marge. We're in this thing together. Let me have that gun, Stephen.
I should have shot you instead of him.
Give me that gun or I'll break your arm off. Give it to me. Okay, Stevens. This is the end of Easy Street for you. Well, that finished that case. Stevens went to the gas chamber on Marge's testimony, and Marge is still in prison on an accessory rap. The red-headed kid, Tom Church, was an innocent victim. He'd been interviewed by Stevens for a job the day before. Stevens knew he had no relatives, no connections, so he decided to frame him for the murder of Joe Dale. He described Church to the police, then called him at his hotel and asked him to come to Stevens' home for an interview about a job. If Church had been in when the call came, I might have muffed the case. But he was out, and Stevens left his number for a callback. That was luck, I guess. But I don't know. I think I would have solved the case anyway. Yeah, of course, I didn't make a dime out of it. Oh, well, money can't buy happiness. But it can buy a lot of things that make unhappiness pleasant, can't it? Oh, you know what I mean. This is
is Dick Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed our story tonight. Ray Buffum wrote it. Leith Stevens composed and conducted the music, and Dee Engelbach produced and directed. Next week, we have a story for you about a missing witness, a worried rogue, and an ambush that failed. Be with us then, will you? Thanks for listening, and now here's Jim Doyle.
Be sure to tune in again next week, same time, same station, when you will again hear Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Laugh a while, let a song be a bad news pitch. Shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, straight your hair, use pitch. Shampoo.
After and between Fitch shampoos, you can keep your hair shining and manageable by using a few drops of Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic every day. Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic is not sticky or greasy, yet it gives your hair that well-groomed look.
I use 40 weight, like I said. It's the best stuff for the hair. Erie House Radio proudly presents Scar's Moral of the Story.
Oh, we're doing that.
Jealousy is like jelly beans. Once you get started, you can't get enough of it.
Or
triangles work best in geometry, in art, in music, but rarely in relationships.
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
It was disgusting.
Yes, it was. It was disgusting.
That one was.
Yeah, no. I don't know. Some people pay extra for that. Anywho.
Anyway, yeah, that's some people.
It was a night that we will be here.
And God will be there afterwards at 8 p.m. on Twitch.
On them no Twitches. Yep.
Hey, everybody. On Weird and Truly Bad Movie page, my Facebook personal Facebook page, and on Erie House Radio, one of the sketches we filmed last week at the Toys and Noise about a toy ray gun. You gotta go catch
it.
It's really fun.
Yes.
A toy ray gun. So they say.
And I think you overpaid for it, but that's me. But go ahead.
Yep. So tomorrow night we've got suspense, circumstantial terror.
Yep.
And Whistler, you can't trust a stranger, and don't forget to check out Weirdness. Really, really bad movie.
Yeah, Tuesday on Bandex. Woohoo!
And Horrible Horror, starring Gargoyle.
That's right after our show.
Saturday at 8 o'clock.
Yep.
Yes. I have a program that hasn't seen the light of day since 2015.
It's been not even in syndication.
No,
not even in syndication. It was pulled from the package.
We dug into the Gargoyle archives and pulled it out from 2015.
Yes,
a much younger Ghoul.
Oddly, I don't look different, but okay. It's as though I never age. I don't know what that is. My beard gets longer and shorter, but no, we don't. No.
Yeah.
You have magical powers.
Yes.
Yes. That's why he doesn't age.
Mm-hmm.
And you can enjoy those magical powers at 8 right after our show here. Thanks for joining us on Erie House Oldie Timey Radio.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
That is, we're not with anybody else.
Oh, wow.
A whole lot of radio.
Whole lot of radio.
You're a walking soundbite machine.
A whole lot of radio.
Not a lot of radio.
A horrible horror. It is I, Guard the Gold, blah, blah.
He gets. That's scary.
It is. That's the Bizarro. That's Bizarro Gar.
Yes.
Bizarro Gar. Yes.
Boy, boy, is he rolling calf awake of this. Yeah, that guy.
Uh-huh. And you, too, can have this if you check your mailbox out tomorrow.
Wouldn't Bizarro Gar be going around, like, trying to make people unhappy?
Like a certain internet company? Yeah, I guess.
Is that bothering you? It's hardly on your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. You never say anything about it, you know?
Yeah, dude, that does suck.
Good afternoon, sir. We're calling to find out if you are happy.
I am at war with a door company, and I will soon be visiting their social media pages.
Oh, there you go.
To get a little prompter reply.
No,
they delivered
you go,
a door
getting,
that had a
getting
bolt,
kicked off
defective.
Another website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've been blocked again.
Woohoo.
Woohoo.
Hoot was chasing him some deer today because they come pretty close to our property and he was going nuts. He tries to herd things. He even tries to herd us.
Yes, it was all a bad dream.
It was.
All a bad dream.
He pushes us in, like, in the direction he wants us to go. He's funny.
Hmm. Wow. Crazy.
When I'm older and feebler, he's going to get away with it, but not right now.
Unless you change your name to Feebler, and then maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Yep.
Wasn't that the name of that orchestra guy, Arthur Feebler?
No, Feedler. Feedler. With a
yeah,
D.
Yeah, Feebler. Feebler than Dale K.
No,
yeah,
D.
Okay.
With a D. No,
yeah.
A D.
With a,
yeah.
With a Q.
He's a tree making cookies.
An R.
Feebler. He lives in a tree.
Yeah, yeah, that guy.
Keebler.
Yeah, that's one heck of a tree. That's all I got to say.
Arthur Treacher.
I can't recall. Right. Arthur Treacher Peebler. Yeah, that guy.
That's it.
Arthur Peebler Niebler.
Do you realize within about 4 stone throws of my house here, just up in Cuyahoga Falls, is the last remaining Arthur Treacher's fish and chips in the country?
Is it really still there?
It is. The last remaining Arthur Treacher's fish and chips.
I remember
that meal
when
you cannot bake at home.
Dave,
yeah.
The suburb of Bedford Heights is a lot closer to you now than I am. Is that correct? It's a southwest suburb of Cleveland.
Southwest? I'd probably be about the same.
I would say that's a lot closer, because I remember being able to just jump like on 271 and you could get to Cuyahoga Falls real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Or
what is that game that involves Kevin Bacon? 12 degrees, is that it?
Seven degrees of Kevin Bacon, yeah.
6 degrees.
7 degrees.
No. 6 degrees.
Six degrees.
Okay.
6 degrees. Well, yeah. Oddly, back when I was a ute and I was working as an assistant plumber's helper to my father, which is kind of like an apprentice, my dad had a contract and we worked all of the Arthur Treachers in Orlando.
Ah, cool.
What do you mean by worked them?
Well, if the plumbing got stubbed up, they'd call us.
I thought, walk in and steal all their stuff. Yeah, we worked the joint.
No. Yeah, we worked the joint. No. If they had a faucet that was leaking, or if they needed new plumbing installed, or if they had plumbing problems, they'd call us. Why? We were on contract with them.
Is Fosbane the most amazing guy ever?
He is. He is. Mm-hmm. But you know what? At Arthur Treacher's, one last Arthur Treacher's note, I did spend some time being a fry chef there.
Ooh.
There you go.
But I got a chance to become an assistant manager at Burger King, so I did put in my notice and leave that job. But
I should drag the wife out your way for some Arthur Treacher's. It's hard to find good.
It's the greatest thing in the world, but it is the last one.
Yeah. Dave, are you saying that you had 5,628 jobs when you were young? What?
No.
We all?
I had, you could count them probably on one and a half hands. That's all. Sorry.
Okay. There you go.
Sorry.
That was like one of the funniest bits of radio for me ever was when Dave determined. So, Guy, you got fired a lot, huh? No, I didn't. That's one of the thankful aspects of it. Didn't get fired. I quit. Now, I didn't quit before they fired me. I just my horizon is moving in a different direction.
Yep. Sometimes you ain't feeling it, and you got to move on. Yep.
Even one where I really thought I was getting fired, I didn't. And the reason I didn't was because the company I was working for, Taco Bell, didn't want to pay the unemployment benefits.
But they have to if you're working full time.
No. All they did was they started to reduce my hours until I wasn't on the list at all. And then, kid, don't even show up. We're not firing you, but there's no work for you here.
Yeah, you exactly. Have no hours.
Right.
Taco Bell did that to you?
Yes.
Taco Bell did that to you? Wow.
Yes.
God, you must have really...
What happened was I had this big aluminum pot, and it had two handles on each side. And it was filled with either beans refried or beef, one of the two. And it was big. It was like it held, I don't know, maybe 4 gallons of stuff.
Well,
the
beef
they said, okay.
The beef was in the pan. The beef was in the pans. The beans were in the pot.
Okay.
9 days old.
So, you had to pick this up with both of the aluminum handles on there, and I had gloves for that, but my forearms were exposed, and I picked it up, and my forearms hit that pan, and I took two steps, and I dropped it. Well, that's $9 billion worth of food sales for them because, you know, you take a teaspoon of beef and a teaspoon of stuff, and that's their product. So you drop a pan of that stuff, I was out the door. It didn't – before it hit the floor, I was out the door. That was it. They didn't care that I had, you know, burns on my arms or anything. They were like, nope, food product, see ya.
It was, you know, you said, son of a, you know, in front of the
No, I didn't.
They couldn't let you do that.
Yeah. I would have said, son of a bozo, and they would have gone, what?
So then you should have.
Yeah, I don't. I might have squeaked more than I had a what are those words called? A profanity.
Expletive.
Yeah, there we go. That was it. Yeah, it was. I was trying to come up with that word in one of the things that I use as a. It's a rerun, but it's a test on Twitch, and I was trying to come up with that expletive, and I kept saying. Interrogative, and that's like, no, that's a question. That's not what I'm looking for. Expletive, that's the word. So, how goes it, the war on doors for Mr. Dale K?
Well, it's gonna have to escalate. You have cable, I have doors. I have door issues.
That?
Yeah. Deliver a book.
He did, that guy just. I could very well be that guy's history, because it might be that that guy is going to put in his memory for the rest. He's going to tell that story to grandchildren. Someone didn't think I knew what the value of 14 was. I don't know what you know and what you don't know. I'm not calling you stupid, sir. I'm just tossing out values.
I don't know what you don't know, yes.
I don't know your life skill set. Your parents might, you know, have, you know, locked you in a closet for most of you. I don't know. I don't know what he knows.
If not, they should have.
Well, see, you cannot. A lot of the problems in the world, just sidebar for me, is that we expect that other people have our life set or our life skills, and they do not. They have their life skills and their experience. So when we expect someone to know, they might not. So I wasn't calling them stupid. I was just saying, let me illustrate the point.
Yep.
But he did. He thought he was. He wanted to say, "Sir, I'm not stupid." And I'm like, "I can't say. I can't agree or disagree to that statement. I don't know you."
Yeah. But the longer this conversation goes,
yeah. Don't make me break out my Networking Plus certification guide and start asking you questions. It started off with the guy saying, "I'm not technical." So I was like, "Let me explain this then." In non-technical terms, and I got, "Do you think I'm stupid?" And I'm like, "Well, I don't know. It's your word choice, not mine. You know, what do you do? What are you gonna do?" Never assume. Ever. My dad bore that into my head as a youth, as a young ghoul. Never assume other people might know anything. Okay, Dad.
That's getting easier and easier to do as time goes by.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Is it us? Is it us? That's my... Is it us? I don't know. You know?
It could be, but I'm inclined to think not.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree.
Just a theory.
Boy.
Yeah, so at some point I accidentally unplugged my headset, and from thenceforth it wouldn't go back on.
Oh, yeah.
I kept switching it and pulling it. So. It might have to do with having disconnected from Blog Talk. I don't know. I'm just glad to show
it. What it did is it went. It was looking for something else then once that became unplugged. If you pulled up your Audacity, you could have changed it there in your input settings on Audacity, and it should have brought it back. Because that's what happened when I unplugged mine accidentally. But I am not a technician, no. I am not.
Yeah. I always tell my technicians, lick the wire before you plug it in.
Lick it? Oh, jeez.
Lick the wire before you plug it. Yeah, exactly. Oh, look, wrenched ankle. That one, you know. What was it? What's that thing? Something funny bone. Broken funny bone? I'm a winner. Yeah, there you go. All out of radio.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
For the evening.
Parma.
Funny. Parma.
He captured everything.
Parma.
Well, it's a reflection that Frogsbane is a very determined listener for what we're doing here, which is great.
He's definitely an engineer. I'm telling you what, it took me a while to start piecing this stuff together properly.
It'll take me longer, but I'll do it. Oh, and it comes with some nice, shall we call them accoutrements? Or cooters.
Yes.
Yeah. K Cooters, yes.
Cooters.
Accoutrements. Accoutrements from Geppetto's. Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, he has been listening. He sent me a note. He's been actually listening since 2013. That was the beginning of Creepy Castle.
Wow.
And I do remember him being a viewer on Creepy, Eerie House TV and Creepy House.
Yeah.
House, Creepy Castle. He's been around a long time.
No, well, maybe I'm right on the cusp because I popped in and got to know you when you were with the other guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because we had the interview. Yeah, we had the interview with, not Cremation Mortem. What's her name?
Oh, the gal out of Missouri.
Yes.
Misty Brew.
Oh. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, there we go. Whew. Thank you for having a memory that I no longer have. Yes. Yeah, in fact, she just had a birthday, and I sent her a...
product of the 70s.
Yeah.
Sorry. Lucky I remember
what her name. She just had a birthday, Misty Brew did. And I sent her a birthday wishes and birthday greetings, and she was so happy. She's such a nice lady. I man.
Yeah.
She's
good people.
She's a really,
when we brought her on the channel and stuff like that, she was so gracious and so nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And her ambassador, what's his name? Timex Seaball.
Yeah, Timex Seabag. Seaball. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Seaball.
Musician extraordinaire.
Yes.
He's a nice fellow, too. Very nice man.
Yep.
In fact, I just happen to have this. There's a book in which Misty Brew was interviewed, and the book is called Vampira and Her Daughters, Women Horror Movie Hosts from the 1950s into the Internet Era.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see if I can find it.
Mm-hmm.
There's an opportunity that she mentioned you guys.
Yes, she did. I remember this.
And she, and she mentioned little old Gar as well. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm in print.
Yeah. Yep.
Which, you know, that's kind of an achievement, you know, that you...
Does having your picture in the post office count as being in print?
I used to know hang around a lot of horror hosts, Gar, with Creepy Castle. Jack knew everybody, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And still does. But, I don't know, I'm kind of socially retarded, somewhat.
Well, yeah, I rarely come out of my trip.
Then, even.
Right.
But I'll tell you
Oh,
what,
man, and there's Ms. Monster. She's Ms. Monster out of California. Her skin tone is blue. She is hilarious. And
yeah.
I actually got a kit of stuff
from her. Is she the one with
her.
The melons? Is she the one with the melons?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ms. Monster and her monster melons.
I never worked with her directly, but... For a short while, I was affiliated with the Monster Channel.
Right.
Then it went down, and that's when Jack and I started Creepy Castle, when the Monster Channel went down.
Mm-hmm.
From live stream.
Right.
Because that guy was paying for an expensive package, and he was very upset with them with some technical issues they had, I guess. And then he moved on and went dark for a while. And then after Creepy Castle went down, all of a sudden there's Monster Channel Roku. Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, here it is. Let's see. Misty Brew, quote, I was shocked to learn how many other horror movie hosts there were around the country. Dale Kay and the other guy were more than accommodating when approached about adding Misty
Brew to
their
name. It's not like cursing.
No, it's kryptonite. I ain't doing it.
Triggered.
Yeah, I know. Cleaning woman. Cleaning woman.
Yeah.
Cleaning woman. from Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. Let's see. Cleaning Woman.
I wish I could get a copy of that book because Lady Horror Host, they got things started both on radio and TV.
Right. Her quote here is, websites were created and new footage was filmed. We instantly started to receive love and support from the Horror Host community, who are also happy to welcome Misty's return. Call her the Ghoul! And Horror Dave's were the first to acknowledge her awakening. And we just had a lot of fun. I was just amazed that we got a nod in this. You
yep.
and myself and all the folks that she mentioned.
Isn't it funny how we ended up working together now?
That's even weirder. Yeah.
Because we didn't know each other that well when that was written.
No, and as soon as the check clears, we'll be fine.
No, it's an honor to be mentioned. It's an honor to be mentioned.
It is. It is. And I have to definitely say it. I'm making no more money than Dave is. So.
Dave.
Well,
you're amazing
that I know
too
of.
That's going to be really hard to top working with Big Chuck, Little John, and Uli.
Yeah.
Oh, I tell you what, that's highlight. I mean, we grew up watching those guys, Dale. And to me, not only working with him, writing for Chuck and directing him, helping direct him in his episode, that was just so, I mean, if I wasn't doing that, I'd be just running around in circles in that room,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When he was in there. Just
right.
Absolutely one of the highlights of
say
next
it.
Year when Mike Mace goes down to Florida, I may see if I could fly down for a day or two just to do some skits with him and Huli.
That'd be cool.
Because Huli would do it. Huli would do it.
I as well have had contact with my horror movie host, the first one. Dale, have you had contact with yours?
With my what?
The first horror movie host you were.
Yeah, the
or was
ghoul
it Big
and,
Chuck and.
I would say the
ghoul. I'm sorry. A total mental breakdown on my side. That's right. Yeah, you worked with the ghoul.
Yeah, I was on his TV show for over a year, his radio show for over a year.
But before you were a kid, was the ghoul around?
Okay, so I have vague memories of Ghoulardi. I was probably 5 or 6 when he left Cleveland, all right?
Right.
I was too young to stay up for Big Chuck, so I really didn't become aware of him until late 60s, and about 1970 the Ghoul showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So right around when I was getting old enough to be allowed to stay up late at night, I was more attracted to the Ghoul because he was so wild, And
so you were like 8 years old and the Ghoul was on TV?
No, I was probably in my, when did he start? 70, probably 72. So
I think it
was
a little later than that. I think it was more like 74, 75.
Well, I remember staying up for him bringing in 74 on old.
Okay.
What was it, WKBF? I think. The old Channel 61. And he went away for a while, right around 75, I think. And that's where he was expressly in Detroit for a while. And he came back to Cleveland in the early 80s. That's when I met him and started doing stuff.
Yeah, his first run, what I remember him from, Dale, was in the afternoons when he got home from school. I didn't really see his night show, but I saw his I watched him. He did the Three Stooges shorts, hosted those.
Yes. Yeah, he would host the Three Stooges and talk in the studio for a little bit, maybe throw in a skit. But
Was he in the same makeup with the glasses with one eye blacked out and
yep.
and all that?
Oh, yeah.
Doing cartoons, and then same when he did the horror host.
For years he never appeared as Ron Sweet. Never, ever, ever. Only towards the end, a couple years before he died, would he be interviewed as Ron Sweet. But he was always the ghoul.
Yeah.
My contact happened when I was about 6 years old. It was 1970, and that was like my first exposure to the guy that was my first. And then that was from 1970, 1972. So I was like from 6 years old to 8 years old. That was the first contact. And then about 10 years ago, I actually had a face-to-face video conference with the guy.
Cool.
And so that brought my circle full, all the way around.
Dave and I got to meet so many at these shows too, Garf. If you can ever get out and about. Fritz the Night Owl, you would have been amazed by him. Even if you'd never watched a single one of his shows, to talk to him in person, mm-hmm. he loves to talk, but the guy has a million stories to tell.
Right.
He does.
We had someone very similar to that in Orlando.
Fritz the Night Owl never considered himself a horror host. He considered himself a movie host because he was on 7 nights a week and was for, 19 years, Dale?
Yeah.
19
and
years.
He would show all kinds of movies during the week and really just do the horror on the weekends.
Sci-fi and horror on Friday night, a double feature.
Yeah.
And see, we've lost that in local TV. I don't know that exists anymore.
And this guy got around so much. He got into comic books like years before, you know, these modern horror hosts started making their own or whatever. He was in, I think, a Superman, wasn't he, Dave?
I think it might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, and that's the footprint that horror hosts are making when they get into your mainstream, which is comic book. How are you going to reach your viewers even more? I got a Superman comic, and Fritz was in there. You'd be like, oh, my gosh, Fritz is in it. You know, so. And Elvira did the same.
Show? Do you remember the Drew Carey show, Gar?
I do.
He would wear, like, ghoul and Goulardi stuff on the national TV show.
T-shirts, yes. Yes, okay. I missed that. It went right over my head. When the Carey show was on, I was married. I was not doing horror stuff. I was into my own thing and working one of my 5,628 jobs. Before I,
I didn't say that. Yes, you did.
Oh my gosh. So. It wasn't on my radar. Did have a horror host on it, but back in what was that? The mid '80s, early '90s, somewhat. These people, Elvira might have been on once in a while, but you know it wasn't local. Elvira was amazing and is amazing and will always be amazing, but she was a horror host out of California that hit syndication and went all over the nation. Even though she never really did,
she had two big things going for her.
Yeah, she.
Yes,
she hit it big.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
In horror world, she did. She got movies. She got TV stuff.
Yeah.
Albums.
But it took away from the local area TV. Albums, posters.
But still,
there are so many
loves
products.
The horror host they grew up with, you know. We're lucky in Cleveland. We had so many.
Yeah.
Yes.
That really were, all of them were popular. Superhost, Big Chuck, The Ghoul, Goulardi.
There was, I know that in Chicago or Illinois somewhere, that there was a massive push with the Bozo character up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Bozo was a regional, local area television character, and Harmon licensed it out, and when he did, and I just fumbled that word, but when it was licensed out,
everybody
Harmon
had their
said,
own
you
Bozo.
Need to, everybody had their own Bozo, but Harmon, the owner, said, this is what Bozo looks like, and you will do makeup like this, you will do costuming like this, this is the script, and this is how you'll present it.
Yeah.
In my area, there was a Bozo, and I was on that show, the age between 6 to 8 years old. I was a little Cub Scout, and we were on there, and it was Bozo.
A whole lot.
The Bozo program, the actor that was a Bozo program, later moved to a place called Virginia Beach or something like that, and he became a horror movie host, and he's a horror movie host to this day. They're still doing horror hosting and stuff.
Oh, no kidding.
So, crazy how the circles go, but I really think the whole horror movie host investigation is in and of itself just amazing how many people were affected by it.
Yep. I got to meet Carol Gordeval.
Oh, yes. I'm familiar.
He's been around
forever
since the 70s. Oh, we had a short run, these guys, Frank and Drack, and now this guy's all over the internet. Drack.
Mm-hmm.
That show was pretty cute. Mm-hmm. I remember.
Frank
it wouldn't
and
have
Drack,
been my favorite, but I would have watched it. It was good, you know, a good horror host thing.
Yeah. I ran across a horror host. It was on syndication. Or it was on, it was a time when television area, local television was piping in stuff, and I got this over the air off of Rabbit Ears. I was in, I believe, the Washington, D.C., Virginia area, and I was piped in a horror host out of the Dakotas named Mad Frank. And
I've heard of him.
His content's out there on the YouTubes and stuff. Just cracked my funny bone. Loved every bit of it. We had Dr. Paul Bear down here out of Tampa.
Yep, two of them.
And he was the guy that had the fake eye, and he'd put his finger on it, move it to the right before the camera started. So one eye was always askew.
Yeah, kind of cockeyed. He had a great set of pipes, too. He had a good voice. I liked him.
Dr. Paul Bear. Yeah, that guy. It was just, my gosh.
This week's product is Ultra Bite toothpaste. Don't leave home without it.
It was amazing. I loved him. And I apologize to anybody that's ever doing imitations of people's voices. That's the best I got for right now.
Yep.
But
Denise had a nice time talking to you, Gar.
I'm sorry, what? We're done.
Denise had a nice time talking to you.
Yeah.
She loves her aminals.
You're the missus. Oh, I'm sorry. I lost my mind. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had a big, long conversation all about critters and all kinds of stuff.
And beasties,
I think I resent her and gave her the opportunity to see some images of me with my hand outstretched and a squirrel sitting on my hand, and he was bogarting the camera. He was looking right at the camera like, I'm right here. That squirrel was so cool. And as well as raccoons and other things, but yeah. So that, I forgot all about that. Not that I meant to. I just, my brain doesn't work the way it should.
Yeah, we know.
But, you know.
You've explained.
I'm fun at parties, right? I don't know.
Yep.
Maybe. I completely missed that. I was like,
that's what they tell you after the party. Yeah.
When they tell you, get out of here, kid. Get out of here. You don't got to go home, but you can't stay here. Get out of here.
Yeah.
That one?
I don't remember much about that party, but people tell me you had a really good time.
Oh, those are the best ones. Those are the best ones.
I've never had that party, thank gosh.
Me neither. You know what? For all the dumb stuff I ever did, I never forgot the night before.
Yeah. I had blackouts when I was in the military, but you know, maybe it was blackout.
I never had a blackout.
I had blackouts. I don't know why. Every morning I'd wake up back where I was supposed to be going, how did I get here?
Except for
that
hospital,
was the blackout part.
And I wanted to blackout because they were about to cut me up.
Yeah, no, that was
a repetition. That'll be good.
Yeah, that was a repetition of my blackout was, how did I get here? I was in the right place. I woke up on time, but how did I get here? I was fortunate to always wake up where I was supposed to be. Yeah, it could have been to my dismay, where am I? a little bit of a difference there.
Listen, guys. I got
to
take care of...
It's time to hoot.
It's time for hoot. Nighttime hoot.
Nighttime hoot.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we'll go chase
always
the bats
fun, guys.
Or the squirrels or something.
Mm-hmm. Always fun.
Yep. And good luck with the cable.
Yes.
Whole lot of radio.
Next time I want to hear about the 8 trucks there, though. I want to hear about the 8 trucks next time.
Okay, we'll do that. Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess it's time for the old schnozzola.
And we'll see you at
8:30 Eastern. And right after that, 8 o'clock, it's the Twitches with Horrible Horrors, starring Gar the Ghoul.
Gar the Ghoul. That guy. Boy, boy. Hey,
good night, Jimmy.
Dabble Icarus.
Good night, Jimmy.
All right.
Come on, Jimmy.
Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. What more to say but good night?
Yahtzee.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrigo, up we the day, and ink-a-tink-a-doo.
Ink-a-tink-a-doo.
Good night. Good night.
Wow, wow, wow.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Where are you?